This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Lynching is a shameful part of American history that you may have thought most people found hard to admit and would now rather forget. But violence against black people was often a public spectacle. It was, and in some ways still is, brazenly memorialized. Filmmaker Jacqueline Olive became interested in the history of lynching. Her research began with stories of long ago, but soon enough landed her right here in North Carolina with the 2014 death of Lennon Lacy. Lennon was a 17-year-old African-American man found hanging from a swing set in the town of Bladenboro. Bladenboro police called it a suicide. The community called it a modern-day lynching. Jacqueline Olive's film, Always in Season, won a special jury award at Sundance. It screens in Durham at the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival next week, and she is with us now. Jacqueline Olive, welcome to The State of Things.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to join you.
Take us back to an exhibit, I think, that got you thinking about lynchings and made you want to learn more.
Yeah, there's an exhibit called the Without Sanctuary exhibit, Lynching Photographs and Postcards. And it is a collection of images of lynching victims, black people hanging, surrounded by the smiling faces of white men, women, and children. So often until through a certain period of probably about the 1930s or 1940s, lynching was a spectacle event. And so men, women, and children would come out to watch a lynching as an event. People would bring their families or their neighbors or their friends. And photographs were taken. A photographer would set up in the middle of a lynching, adjust for lighting, for composition, and photograph the violence as it happened. And people would also come up and pose with the bodies of the victims afterwards. And those photographs were often turned into postcards. And so when I moved back to my home state in Mississippi in the early 2000s, I saw that exhibit, and what really struck me was that the faces of the victims could have been my family members. They could have been my friends. They could have been my neighbors, the people that I knew. Prior to that, I thought, like a lot of people, about lynching when I thought about it at all as just anonymous, the victims as anonymous black men hanging.
And the fact that these were not only photographs, I think we may have known that they were public spectacles. I think this is perhaps widely taught, I would hope so, and there are renderings in this. But the fact that these photographs were actually postcards distributed as such is very telling about how they functioned in the social order. This was not something that happened behind the scenes. It was a very public spectacle that performed a very important function where it was carried out.
Absolutely. There's a myth that lynchings happen in the middle of the night in the backwoods, carried out by backwards redneck people is often the stereotype. But they were lynchings were attended without necessarily any affiliation with the Klan. And even when there was a Klan affiliation, hoods were rarely used. The Klan membership was similar to what might be the Sierra Club membership of the time. It was commonplace. And so people attended lynchings fully, openly, and unabashed. And they attended those often in the middle of town on the courthouse lawn, on the public square, in the middle of day, and posed proudly for photographs. And that happened often where half the town would come out. In a lynching in Waco, Texas in 1916, 15,000 people came out to that lynching.
Now, for 15,000 people to come out in time for the lynching also suggests that these were not the spontaneous episodes of mob violence. They were often advertised in advance, were they not?
They were. So in Always in Season, we have some segments of documentation from lynchings that Danny Glover reads. And I wanted to include that because so that people understand how organized the events were. He read an invitation to the 1934 lynching of Claude Neal in Marianna, Florida. That invitation was dispersed by telegram in the local newspapers and by radio for people to come and attend the lynching. So they were highly planned events. And it was also about this message of the power dynamics of white supremacy and maintaining that.
Yeah, and that is well laid out throughout the film as we learn about the history of lynching, which ultimately will bring us to North Carolina in 2014. But here's a clip of Cheryl Ifill, who is the president of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, talking about the function of lynching.
Most black men were lynched because they were accused of having sexually assaulted a white woman for murder or some violent act committed usually against a white man. But sometimes it could just be having violated the rules of, you know, not having tipped one's hat or having left the side of the street when a white person was walking past. It could be being regarded as uppity. And it really involves a process of dehumanization, that the black man had to be physically restrained, that he was over-sexualized, that he was naturally and inherently violent, or something that's not human.
That's from the documentary Always in Season. That is Cheryl Ifill with the history lesson on lynching. Always in Season screens at the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival in Durham next Friday evening. I'm talking with Jacqueline Olive, the film's writer, director, and producer. So we talk about the function of this. And you were actually years into filming this film when you heard about Lennon Lacy.
I was. The film is a decade in the making, and I researched the subject for 2 years before I began filming in 2010. And so I spent a lot of time really wanting to understand the scope of the terrorism. And then I started to find that there were people on the ground doing work to confront this history, to look at how to memorialize the victims, how to repair the damage in their communities in order to build a groundwork for reconciliation. And so I filmed in communities like one of the ones that's featured in the film in Monroe, Georgia, outside of Atlanta, where a group of reenactors get together every year to annually reenact a quadruple lynching that happened there in 1946. And they do that to make sure that the victims are never forgotten. And so it's those stories that really that really drew me to understand how this country might move towards justice and reconciliation.
Tell us the story of Lennon Lacy.
So I filmed for 4 or 5 years and saw in the media that Lennon was found hanging in Bladenboro, North Carolina. He was found hanging from a swing set on August 29th, 2014. And I reached out to his mother, Claudia, and spoke with his older brother, Pierre, to get more details. And the more that I talked with them, the more that I realized there were so many parallels to what had been going on historically in communities that were dealing with the fallout of historical lynchings. And so one of the inconsistencies in the evidence is that they believe that the shoes that were found on Lennon's feet were not his. They were a size 10 and a half, and Lennon wore a size 12. And so there are inconsistencies in the evidence. There's the fact that he was dating a, at the time, 31-year-old white woman in a town with sharp racial divisions, a small town of 1,700 people. Bladenboro is also small by definition of small towns, it's extraordinarily small. And also it is geographically isolated. And so is a town in which these kind of stories, these kind of cases could be easily overlooked. And so I really wanted to understand more about what happened and to really look at that case in depth.
You talked with Lennon's mother, as you said, Claudia Lacy, and she talks about the day that he died and the way that she was told about this or actually brought to the scene by the police. Let's listen.
Think about it as if it was your son or your daughter, if you knew in your heart and in your mind that someone took your child's life and everything that you've done is humanly possible, they taken it and twisted it and turned it, how far would you go to get to the truth? How soon would you let it go?
Claudia Lacy, the mother of Lennon Lacy, found hanging from a swing set in Bladenboro nearly 5 years ago. Lennon Lacy's family and his story profiled in the documentary Always in Season, screening at the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival next Friday. I'm talking with filmmaker Jackie Olive. There are a number of inconsistencies in the story. As you say, number one, the fact that he wasn't wearing his shoes when he was found. Questions about the belt that he was found around his neck, not his clothing. The fact that he was dating a white woman at the time. And the fact that, you know, there's also a history of the Bladenboro police who had been involved in a horrific scandal involving drug sales and the extortion of black men in the town. All of this adds up to a lot of suspicion. Talk about how the story unfolds in Bladenboro and how these communities are handling it at the time.
Yeah, it adds up to a lot of questions. And the reason why I felt it was really important to that this story really frame the narrative for the film is because, like lynchings historically, there was a very swift investigation and very cursory. And so within 3 days, the police came to Claudia and Pierre and told them that Lennon committed suicide. And Claudia did not believe that her son committed suicide. She doesn't know what happened, but she wants answers, and she wanted answers. And so she worked with the North Carolina NAACP, with Reverend William Barber, to get an FBI investigation opened into the case. And so we follow that journey. Ultimately, the FBI did open an investigation into the case. That's actually quite unusual. It's quite unusual in the context of the spate of hangings that have been going on since 2005 of Black people found hanging contemporarily in public spaces from trees. Heather Radelaide, who is the attorney who helped to bring the evidence to the FBI for the Lacey family, Heather found that there were 20 similar hangings of Black people across the country from 2005 to 2016, and it's still continuing. There was the hanging of Otis Byrd in my home state of Mississippi in 2015, and Ben Kada, who was found hanging, a Muslim teenager, 18, who was found hanging outside of Seattle, Washington, from a tree in 2017. There's been a recent case of Donye Jones, who was found hanging in St. Louis, Missouri. And so these cases are frequently swept under the rug, called a suicide, with very little investigation, and that Claudia was able to get an investigation open really speaks to her determination and her her commitment to finding answers in this case, and also the way that people came together to support her in this. There are so many parallels historically when lynchings, less than 1% of lynchings, lynching cases ever went to trial historically. And so there are these parallels that really spoke to me and were really resonant beyond just the question of who done it around Lennon. It's really a bigger question for me about what authorities are doing, what is going on systemically with policing and with the criminal justice system in these cases and in these communities nationally.
Yeah, you talked about how swiftly it was the investigation was carried out, and among the inconsistencies, the FBI was called in, but they assigned an expert in suicide and not in homicide. Big difference in the way you handle the evidence, big difference in what you're looking for. And so if you don't have a homicide investigator, you're likely to lose a lot of important evidence because you're not experienced. Not only that, but apparently the coroner who was called as a medical examiner was not allowed to take pictures, started taking pictures, and police took his camera away from the scene, which attorneys found unusual, if not unprecedented. The investigation that you talked about found that there was, in fact, nothing to overturn the decision that it was suicide.
The investigation, actually the FBI investigation, found that there was not enough evidence to pursue a homicide investigation. They didn't determine that it was a suicide, but that there wasn't enough there to pursue a homicide investigation, which is understandable when on the ground, when that physical evidence is not collected in the way that the case really merits.
Right. As we said, a lot of the evidence, the photographs and having the right kind of detectives on board from the beginning suggests a loss of the kind of evidence that the FBI might have been looking for. So the coverage? What about the coverage in the press at that time? What did you find?
Yes, I found that that Lennon's case was, I found a couple of things. One is because I came on to the story from having looked at, from having found it in the news. And I think that because it was, Lennon's death happened shortly after Michael Brown was gunned down in Ferguson, Missouri, that it was overshadowed by the movement that was going on there in Ferguson around the protest. But also, I think that it actually was a bit of a benefit because people were starting to look at racial violence generally in this country. Regardless of how it began, I think that the news coverage is typical of the way that news coverage goes and the way that really actually we're encouraged to look at racial justice issues in this country generally is to look for simple solutions and to ask simple questions. And so to frame this story in the case of whodunit means that once you have an answer, whether or not Lennon was murdered, whether or not he was lynched, or whether or not he committed suicide, then we can move on. But there are bigger questions that are incredibly important that we need to unpack around, one, the way that journalists show up in the context of these deaths and in these cases, that whether or not the focus is on just as much on the issues around policing in Blatantboro, including other issues around inequity in education and all of the other issues of systemic racism that are mirrored there as it is across the country.
Do you think that is, as you said, there have been a number of cases now where we're forced to at least look at the case and the whodunit part of it, but this film and other kinds of coverage around these cases, do you think we are taking a more sustained look and a deeper look at the systemic causes, or are we still kind of one and done?
I hope we are. I'm naturally an optimist, and so I think that I can see how there are instances in which we are taking a more in-depth look. But I think that there's room for us to really examine these issues more with more complexity, with more nuance, and to really dig in to the questions that are apparent. I'll have to say apparent to people of color in these communities, but not necessarily apparent to mainstream media, which tends not to be completely inclusive of people of color. And so as we start to get more aware of our biases and our need for diversity, then I am really optimistic that we'll start to ask deeper questions and more questions that are more central to the issues that are going on in communities like Blatantboro.
Jacqueline Olive is the writer, director, and producer of the documentary Always in Season. It's going to screen at Full Frame Documentary Film Festival Friday, April 5th. You can find the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Jackie, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Frank.
As I said, you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. You can also sign up for our newsletter and get a daily preview of our lineup. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio.